Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
The party's over.
The party's over. It's over, man. Game over.
Aaron O'Brien, what up?
Welcome to Synthaholics, episode...
Episode 139.
Episode 139. Wow.
Yeah, can you believe it?
Making the rounds.
And we've got a brand new Discovery, Star Trek Discovery, we're going to be talking about. But this one seems to be very reminiscent to Star Trek Next Generation Cause and Effect.
Very much so, except it wasn't an accident.
No, this wasn't an accident.
So I guess we should do spoiler-free first.
Yeah, well, if you know anything, it has kind of like a time loop thing going on in this episode.
Yeah, cause and effect. The Enterprise keeps running into the USS Bozeman, which was sent out around the time of Wrath of Khan, and it had Frasier as the captain, so that was always cool.
Hey, baby, I hear the Frasier calling.
Toss salad and scrambled eggs.
Oh, my. So we did talk about that. If you ever want to go back to episode 126, we had Joe DePinto on, and we talked about that episode at length. And that's if you do want to watch Cause and Effect, just for your own information, that's Star Trek Next Generation Season 5, Episode 18. But this is Discovery, and we'll be talking about this episode, which is magic to make the sanest man go mad.
Who's the sanest man, do you think?
Ooh, I would say probably Berman, but she's a woman. But I'm just gonna. I'm assuming.
Well, the general, you know, man, as in indicating yeah. Mankind.
I mean, I meant the broadest man kind of thing.
Well, I mean, it does.
Chuban.
That does sort of kind of make sense. Once we get into the episode, I'll explain why, because it's kind of a spoiler.
But spoiler-free, we get Harry Mudd, which is pretty awesome, and we get time loops, which are interesting.
They're usually a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we get a space whale, so I don't think that ruins anything.
Oh, I mean, you saw something sitting on the hangar deck, and it is indeed a space whale.
And, yes, it's not a giant piece of phlegm that somebody coughed up.
Yeah, it's also not a fish.
No, it's not a fish. Technically, it's not a fish.
So, spoiler-free, I think I got myself too hyped up for this episode. It wasn't a bad episode. It's just I knew it had, like, the cause and effect time loop thing in it from the preview last week. And it had Harry Mudd. So those are just two things I just absolutely love a lot. And so I think this episode failed on expectations for me personally, but I probably just got myself too wrapped up in it. For people who avoid the previews... for next week, you know, I can maybe see them enjoying this episode a whole lot more as more of a surprise. But I knew what was coming, and I was really pumped for it.
Yeah, so you're saying you had a huge nerd boner going into this episode.
Yeah, a huge nerd boner, and it kind of was like a sad hand job, but...
Well, there you go. I kind of felt the same way. I didn't dislike the episode, and I think it's setting up some other personal things going on, especially with Michael Berman. But I did feel a little let down in some aspects, and we'll get into more detail later. But fun, you know, it's fun to see Harry Mudd, and he seems far more cunning than we see him from the original series.
Way more cunning. Like, I don't know how, like, I want to see how this Harry Mudd turns into that Harry Mudd. So I hope he comes back so we can kind of see, like, what happens to him. Do the corrections he goes to, like, make him less cunning? Like, he thinks he's still cunning, but he just comes off as, like, silly? Because if he was like this in Kirk's time, I don't know if Kirk could have taken him.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, especially with the time loop thing, because you have to have somebody who can somehow transverse time. So,
like, if the Enterprise was a secret weapon, and Kirk, I don't know if Kirk could have done it.
Like, I don't think so either. And if you do want to get into the background of Harry Mudd, we do go into in quite in depth in our episode 127, The Ballad of Harry Mudd. We go through his two appearances in the original series and his one appearance in the animated series. And we go in pretty in depth with just how his character is and everything. And this was before Discovery aired. So we were, you know, hyped up because we knew Mudd was going to be in it.
And Rainn Wilson as Mudd does not disappoint. And yes, there's lots of callbacks to previous episodes. And we did them on purpose before Star Trek Discovery started. So we can have, like, you know, for more on this, go back to this.
Yeah. But that being said, this is a far more cunning Mudd. I mean, when we saw him originally on the Klingon ship that was he was being held captive, he was cunning, but he seemed still kind of the same old Mudd. This is like... he took it to the nth degree here. Like it's a totally different game.
It's almost he plays scary Harry Mudd almost like he's scary, and that's
scary Mudd.
Yeah, he's scary Mudd this episode. Absolutely scary.
Harry scary Mudd.
As far as first impressions go, this is the first episode where I feel like Michael Burnham's really the main character.
Yeah.
Really, really the main character. Because up until now, she's always just kind of been there. And last episode, it felt like, in Lethe, it felt like she was becoming the main character. But I didn't feel like she was the main character. This episode, without a doubt in my mind, she's finally feeling like the main character of the show.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
So now that she's got that bridge station that she got last time, and she's like doing logs, because that's one thing I think Discovery's been missing. Like, I feel like they have not done logs nearly, like personal logs or things like that, nearly as often as in past Star Trek. So
getting
this, it'll be interesting. Although I'd really love to hear a Lorca log one day. I hope we get one.
Yeah, we haven't heard one. Have we heard one?
I want to say we've not heard a Lorca log. I think we've heard other ones from Michael. But I don't think we've ever heard one from anyone else, I want to say.
Interesting. Well, maybe there's a reason for that, so we don't get into the old to find out the spoilers for ourselves. Because if Lorca tells everything what's happening with the crew and with
the
ship.
That's true, yeah. It's probably to keep him a mystery.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, should we get into full spoilers?
Yeah, well, let's do the episode recap. And it's spoiler time, so if you're ready to tune out until you've seen the episode for yourself, now's the time to do so.
Absolutely. So here we go. Star Trek Discovery, Season 1, Episode 7, which aired October 29th, 2017. And this episode is Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. So we get the first beginning of Berman's making a personal entry for her log. And she's saying basically that she's made friends on Discoveries, but she's found that, you know, she's still kind of at a distance with most people, and that she's found a routine and kind of her place on Discovery. She has noticed that Stamets has found new aspects to his personality. And if we've seen him from episode 3 and going forward, we do know that Stamets has changed quite a bit as a character. And
which I am absolutely loving.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's
I love fun, how dude. He's like 180'd.
He's a fun guy. For sure.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, thank you.
I see what you did there.
Thank you very much. I'm here all night. So, Berman is also seems like she's taken particular interest into Lieutenant Ash Tyler. So, and this is something that we'll see grow through this episode. But Berman knows that tonight there's a party on Discovery, and she's attending it. So
I feel like it's weird that she's like, I'm going to put myself in the situation, because she seems so apprehensive about it. I feel like she should have been made to go by like Tilly or something, like made a promise to Tilly to be there or something, you know, so that it's not just her going on her own, because it seems like she doesn't want to be there like the entire time.
Well, I agree with that, but I do think that she's also, how should I put it? She's an explorer, so she's going to be open to it, even if she thinks it's illogical.
Exploring the unknown. Gotcha.
That's right. So at the party, Berman's standing kind of just by herself, and the lights flicker, and she tells Tilly that that shouldn't have happened because Discovery has redundancies to prevent, you know, power outages like that.
Tilly's like, I'm drunk on beer pong. I don't care.
I'm drunk.
Tilly's hilarious in the scene. Like, it's just beautiful.
She's pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm into musicians, and then you know, Ash Tyler makes a speech. He's like, "Yeah, my military man thing is back.
I'm back into soldiers now."
Yeah.
So Tyler's making a speech, and then Tyler comes after a speech, and he joins Tilly and Berman together, and they're kind of like look like they're gonna like, you know, interact a little bit between Tyler and Michael. But then all of a sudden they get a call from the bridge and they're to report immediately. And so they head their way onto the bridge. But on their way to the bridge, they run into Stamets and Dr. Culver, and they like bump into some tray and there's a big mess. And Stamets' personality is so bizarre. And
so different. He's Burnham's apologizing. He's like, oh, this is what makes life interesting, and gives her a big old hug.
Right. But then he makes the remark that basically he says, you know, what's going on between you and Tyler here? And they're like, what are you talking about? Nothing's going on. You know, so they're acting like there's no, but there's obviously a tension. They kind of like each other. So.
Well, if he's a Klingon, he's got two of them, so.
Well, we don't know that yet. We can only guess.
And this episode, they're doing so much to make you want to like Ash Tyler.
Oh, Tyler's totally going to – whoever he is.
He's going to he's going to be a heartbreaker.
He's going to break her heart. I just know it.
If he's Vok, if he's not Vok, if he's a human that's just been programmed by the Klingons, like whatever it turns out to be, I think he's going to break hearts because I think they're making him so likable. They're doing such a hard – you know, they're doing it hard. Making you want to like him.
Heartbreaker. Moonmaker.
Earthshaker.
That song had to make his way back onto our podcast. Anyways, they head up to the bridge, and on the bridge there is a creature that they run into that they thought it was a ship at first. They weren't really sure.
Yeah, they did a yellow alert.
Right. And because they were in such close proximity to it, but it was part of this endangered species called a Gorgonmander, like a salamander, but a Gorgon.
It's like a demigorgon.
Demigorgon. Which, by the way, I'm like three episodes into Stranger Things season two.
So I'm also cool. Three episodes into Stranger Things season two, and its face opens up just like the demigorgon from season one.
Man, I wonder what they're thinking.
Who knows?
But it could be cool if Eleven walked out of it right after that.
But what walks out of it looks like an Andorian or an Andorian helmet.
I thought it was an Andorian too. But yeah, so
it's probably an Andorian helmet at least.
Could have been. Just to back up real quick, the creature that they found, the Gorgonmander, they said it's an endangered species, and because of that, I guess it feeds off alpha particles, and because of it gorges itself, it doesn't mate anymore with its – or because they keep gorging themselves.
It loses the drive to mate, and Lorca's like, well, that's a shame. Right. I love the ML Lorca's
that's
like
a shame.
The ladies, man.
I take the ladies and I send them off to Klingon prison.
Once they're fulfilled, they get to go see the Klingons and get really fulfilled. Since they've got at least two or three of them.
So, I guess it's part of Starfleet's or the Federation protocol that they have to take these creatures and bring them
to like a habitat.
Yeah, where there's others so they can keep these – they don't go extinct.
I love the concept of like just spacefaring, just – animals, because you don't see that a whole lot in science fiction. I mean, like, or at least in Star Trek.
Only the one that Riker got pregnant, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Anyways.
And Moya from Farscape.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I haven't thought about that. I haven't thought of Farscape in a long time, since the early 2000s.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it doesn't happen that often. There's, like, Farscape, the whole show's based around that one thing. But then in Star Trek, you know, the Riker one, I'm sure there's a couple other examples, but I don't think there's many.
Yeah. So they beam the creature aboard into the shuttlecraft, the Gargamander. And while Berman's doing her initial scans, she says something's not quite right. And all of a sudden the mouth opens up on the creature. And like you said, a man walks out in a spacesuit. He's got a helmet on. And it does seem like he has like an Andorian helmet, because it looks like there's like – it's got like two like devil horns coming up. Like maybe it's protecting antennas or something like that.
Yeah, but it looks like it's like a TOS placement for antenna instead of Enterprise placement for antenna. Because in TOS, the antenna were further back, and in Enterprise, they're further forward.
Right.
So it's interesting. It could be something else too, because the eyes are like bug eyes. So it could be a completely different. Maybe it's an insectoid race, like from the Zendi. We don't know. It's never mentioned, but it's just like maybe it's Andorian, because it does have like blue highlights.
Maybe we can only dream. So. So the man who walks out starts firing on the crewmen that are in the shuttle bay.
He's killing folk. He's killing them.
Oh yeah, like he's just taking them down. And
he vaporizes a couple and shoots holes clean through a couple others. It's like, whoa.
And Berman ducks behind a control panel, and she makes a mad dash to run away. The man in the helmet with the gun starts going after, and he takes off his helmet, and this is Harry Mudd. And he basically threatens to find out what's so special about the Discovery and to sell it. Guaranteeing the Federation will lose the war. And Mudd makes the statement that Lorca leaving him caused him to lose Stella, his love of his life, and he's going to pay him back as many times possible. And then he causes the Discovery to explode. And Discovery explodes pretty violently, and we see Tyler up on the bridge, like counting all the decks that are just destroying.
It's basically starting at like the shuttle bay and like keeps going up. It's like we can't stop it, can't contain it.
Right, exactly.
No abandoned ship. He is not like, no, we're not going to abandon ship. We're just going to die.
He's like, guys, let me get out of here for a little bit, and you guys handle this, and I'm going to take off and take it to the next ship.
Quick to the Kelvin pods. Wait, no. Wrong universe.
Anyway, so so the ship explodes, and then we get bounced back to the time of the party. So we're back to the time loop, back where we pretty much started, and Tyler's giving a speech. And again, Berman and Tyler are called to the bridge. And this time, we don't see Stamets at all in the hallway, but he catches up with them and tries to explain to him that the time is wrong. And he warns them. He says, "If you see a Gargamander, you know this is
that's where it starts."
Yes, they're just like, "What the hell are you talking about?" So when they get up to the bridge, obviously they see the Gargamander, and Tyler's like, "What the hell?" So Tyler and Berman both go to the shuttle bay.
And we get my favorite line from Lorca this episode: "I don't give a damn." And I don't give a damn. Like, I love Lorca.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome.
It's just like, he does not care. He's like, "Let's just get it over with. Can I care less?
He could care less, because he's not about – it's funny because the ship's called Discovery, and yet he's like the furthest one from – He's probably the furthest thing away from Captain Picard than any captain we've ever seen.
He is all like, "I don't care about discovering, except unless it's new ways to kill Klingons."
Right. Is this going to help us kill Klingons? Oh, jeez. Fine. Just do what you got to do.
If you could weaponize Harry Mudd against the Klingons, good grief. He's a one-man army in this episode.
Yeah, he is pretty sweet. So, like you said, let me go back here. So the creature's beamed aboard, but then all of a sudden there's a black alert sound, and Lorca says, like, "I haven't ordered a jump. What's going on?"
I think we get our first line from the robot lady: "I did not initiate."
Did not initiate.
Does not compute.
I wish we'd get a little more information on this character. I mean, she looks pretty cool. Or if it's a she, I don't know if it's a she, but maybe it's an it. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Like, it's the, I think that was our first line from the robot.
Anyway, so Burnham and Tyler run down to the spore drive and engineering, and Bud's waiting for them, and he's trying to figure out how the engines work. Tyler shoots, but he hits a force field.
Yep.
And while they're arguing with it, Stamets shows up right behind Mud and shoots him with a phaser. And there,
and he's like, "Well, we can't stop the explosion. Sorry, guys."
Yeah, basically, Stamets like, "Look, it's going to explode, so there's nothing I can do about." He says, "But we've been through this a couple times already, and he hasn't figured out how to fix it. So he'll just see him next time before the ship explodes.
See you next time." Turns around, makes a funny face, and boom. One thing we forgot to mention earlier during the first interaction with Stamets is we see he's got implants in his arms, which is something I was talking about like two episodes ago. Like, why doesn't he get arm implants to like make taking the needles easier?
Yes,
and exactly. It's like it's there. Like, I'm like, yes. Like, I was excited to see something. I was like, hey, that would make a lot more sense than getting stabbed repeatedly.
Much more logical. Much more logical.
Absolutely.
So we're sent back to the party again. And this time, Stamets looking for Burnham in the party, but
he just misses her. I think.
Yeah, he just misses her, but he catches her when she's running off to the bridge, just discovering the Gargamander, and she doesn't believe Stamets when he tells her about the time loop. But he predicts her exact words, and then puts her like she's saying things, and he's like repeating the words right back to her.
Oh, he's saying them the same time as she's saying them.
Right.
So he know, you know. It's she's kind of getting it because she's like, oh, you should go to sick bay. Your tardigrade DNA is messing with you. You need some help.
Yeah, that tardigrade.
You need a padded room. We'll put some pads in the tardigrade, you know, chamber for you.
Right, right. Lorca is going off the bridge because they said that Stamets is
needs
going.
Help.
Yeah, but he sees Mud, and Mud is taking control of the ship's commands as usual and threatens to trigger self-destruct if Lorca doesn't let him into the restricted area of the ship.
So they go down to his little shop of horrors.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Feed me, Seymour. And then Stamets is explaining the situation to Burnham and that Mud is trying to find the missing piece of the engine to help him run the spore drive. But when he realizes that 30 minutes is up, Stamets asks Burnham to tell him a secret that only she would know. She whispers something to his ear.
So he can avoid the argument. They avoid the whole convincing thing. Just give me one thing that'll immediately convince you, please.
Right.
I'm tired of rehashing this with you every single time I die.
Right. So Stamets said, well, then he's like, ooh, I'm sorry. And then all of a sudden, you know, time is over. So, and Mud kills the captain with some wacky weapon. So, which looks like an old, like, revolver with a.
It looks like a blunderbuss.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
Like a space blunderbuss. It's like, what does this do? Does it melt brains? I love Rainn Wilson as Harry Mudd. He is absolutely phenomenal.
So then we get Lorca. But Lorca says that he killed. I mean, Mud told Lorca that he killed him 53 times, and we kind of go through like a.
But who's counting?
Yeah, but he kind of go through this whole thing about every time he weighs, he's killed him and shot him and ejected him into space.
Yeah, beamed him out into space. Like, so many ways he's killed Lorca. Like, it's
pretty funny to see him beam out to space.
Yeah, like, I almost wish they would have made that sequence longer. Because, like, just to get more of, like, the Harry Mudd hijinks. I wish there was a couple other funny ways he died. Mostly, like, the only funny one was him getting beamed out in the space, and he's sitting there in the captain's chair eating an apple, a la Captain Kirk from Star Trek 2, or the JJ's, the first Star Trek reboot movie.
Right, right.
Very, very reminiscent of that kind of thing. Like, just nonchalant, someone's dying, eating an apple in the captain's chair.
Absolutely. Anyway, there's no other way to do it as a captain. Eat an apple
captain
and watch
Mud.
Him die. Captain Mudd.
And this is why I say I don't think Kirk could have done anything. Because as badass as Lorca is, as like willing to do anything as Lorca is, like his morals are way more questionable than Kirk's. If Lorca died that many times to Harry Mudd, if Harry Mudd, you know, was that messed up in TOS, I don't know how Kirk could have ever, you know, gotten out. So I think something must have happened to Harry Mudd where he got maybe has a mental degeneration where he's not as ruthless and or cunning as he used to be.
Possibly, or maybe just gotten such a bad streak of luck that he just couldn't get, you know, scrape anything together. Just started doing love potions for women and men, or beauty potions,
I guess.
Yeah. So anyway, so we went through all those montages of how Lorca died, and but time resets back, and they're back at the party again. And but Stamets this time finds Berman and tells her that she's never been in love.
And why would you say that to me?
Yeah, just to get her attention, get her to, you know, basically say that, you know, I am what I'm saying, you know, like, I'm not full of shit, basically.
It's like, I need you to talk to Tyler, but, like, they get split up.
Well, yeah, so he tells her to put it, yeah, but they don't get put together. And then it's a weird thing where Stamets and Berman are dance in the hallway in the middle of Discovery, even though he knows the ship's going to destroy itself. It was a very bizarre scene.
Like, some of the scenes, like that one in particular, was strange to me. I mean, it's a beautiful scene where she dances and with him, and he's explaining his love story. It's a very beautifully done scene. It's very well done, but it's a 30-minute event, and he just went and got her on, you know, in the lounge.
Yeah,
and then they're dancing, and then the ship blows up. Like, that was like a really short time loop. Like, it didn't seem like it jived with all the other ones. You know, that one just felt way too short.
Well, and then why would you waste that much time just to dance? He's like, let me just dance with you to find out, you know, what kind of person I'm dealing with. And he's like, will you let me lead?
Yeah, it's informational for Stamets, so he's got more to go on next time. And he's like, you'll do better next time. Just be sure to, you know, get with Ash. And I think at this point, she starts to remember what's happening, at least a little bit.
I know it does seem like that, but it's technically impossible for her to remember this. So that's the part where it starts frustrating me.
Maybe the close, you know, proximity to Stamets, like, it rubbed off on her. But if that's the case, why hasn't it rubbed off on Huber?
But why would it rub off on anyone's? Because nobody's tied into the spore drive like Stamets. I mean, unless you inject yourself with the
tardigrade DNA.
Yeah, I mean,
because they
wouldn't make any sense.
They explained that the tardigrade's a multidimensional being, which I thought was like, oh, wow, that's interesting that it's multidimensional as well as, like, whatever else it is. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, let's see here. And just real quickly, while they're doing the dance, Stamets does tells the background story how Stamets met Dr. Culver and how they fell in love, basically at an opera, and he told Culver to shut up, and basically Culver just sat next to him, and they started going out after that. So
it was a beautiful scene. It was really nice. It was touching. They did some. I mean, the dancing was nice. The interactions were nice, but it just felt
such a
weird thing for, like, yeah, the ship's gonna blow up, but he's like, he's not worried about it. He knows the ship, they'll be right back in a second.
Yeah, just really being incinerated,
like,
for a moment.
In these time loops, does time pass for anyone else outside of it? I know for cause of, I think it for cause and effect it did, but I don't know if they established that it did for them.
Yeah, so strangely enough, at the very end, we do find out that he enters back into their time stream. So there's something that Harry Mudd's doing with his device that is outside the time stream, and this is just looping over and over again.
Okay,
it's not very well explained, but anyways, so the ship explodes, and then Berman this time. This is the part where it kind of got me frustrated, because Berman just immediately pulls Tyler aside onto the dance floor.
And they start dancing.
He asks him to lead, and she broaches the topic of Harry Mudd in the cell with Tyler. Tyler's kind of like, whoa, that's kind of a weird thing to start talking to me about right away. And he says, but Mudd's here, and she explains that they're trapped in this time loop. And she explains that Stamets is basically
not affected.
He's somehow all outside the time loop. But then he starts asking, like, is there anything that they could be that Mudd could have access to that could be doing that? But just Tyler does kiss Berman at this point
twice. And
Yeah, twice. And they're called to the bridge, but Berman says, let's ignore it.
Yeah, let's ignore it. Let's go to your room and shag, and then we'll we'll actually do some fun next time.
Like, here's another 30 minutes. But they don't shag, actually.
I know. I'm just making a joke. But the thing is, like, the thing that was frustrating to me, not was that she remembered. The thing that was frustrating to me was that how long it took for the bridge to call them. Because I'm like, it happened almost immediately every other time. And they're, like, talking for, like, 5 minutes. And I'm just like, oh, my goodness. Like, why is the bridge not called them yet? This doesn't make any sense.
Right. Tyler recalls that Mudd claimed to have broken into a Betazoid bank.
Yay, Betazoid reference.
Yeah, by memorizing everything. And Berman realizes Mudd has a time crystal, but they're said to be unstable.
And they mention that possibly he found a four-dimensional race that has been able to perfect the technology. And I thought that was great because I know I've mentioned on the show before in the past that the wormhole aliens in the Prophets in Deep Space Nine, they have to be fourth dimensional or above, aliens to be able to, exist out of time, and they're confused by the linear. That's why they talk so weird and they have such a hard time grasping, like, three-dimensional creatures.
Sure, sure.
And I don't think we've ever heard that term specifically used in Star Trek before. So I was like, yes, fourth-dimensional beings. I like it.
I think we've bumped into fourth-dimensional here and there, but not too often.
Well, no. They have. I mean, Qs are obviously,
fourth-dimensional.
At least fourth-dimensional. The Prophets are probably higher than fourth mm-hmm. dimension. And we've bumped into them, but we've never heard it explained in those terms before.
Good point.
That I'm aware of.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, I think we've run into people that have done some type of time travel, and then there's also the temporal war, which, is alluded to, but we don't know anything about. So,
yeah.
So knowing all this information that Tyler gives to Berman, that they start figuring out more about how Mudd's controlling the situation. Then we have the next scene, the bridge. Lorca is wondering where Berman Tyler has gotten to when all of a sudden the classical music starts blaring over the speakers. And Mudd walks in and claims to be Captain Mudd, and he beams Lorca to the brig, and takes out the
dark matter little pill he's got.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how it exactly works, but he's threatening to kill anybody in a painful way.
He says it's the most painful way to kill people. I found it in Lorca's little fun basement.
Stamets and Berman show up and. Who's he kill? He kills
the communication officer.
All right.
And then he kills Tyler with the black matter pill bomb thing.
Right. And
it was funny. He said, "Well, this hasn't happened before." Whenever they came up on the bridge, and pulled the guns on him.
Right. And then Stamets says, "Look, I'll tell you how I'm the missing component that you're looking to work the spore drive." And he says, "I just can't take any more killing." Next scene we have Mudd takes Stamets down to the engineering, so they beam down there. Berman then takes Tilly, and Tilly's scanning the Gorgonmander that's still in the shuttle bay. And it says that the Gorgonmander has the crystal and I think Mudd's ship inside of it.
That's a tiny ship.
Yeah, but still,
it's where the power source is, and that's why that poor creature is in such a state of not feeling well. The ship's in there. It's got the power source that powers his time device.
Right. Berman then realizes that she could be used as a chip for betting. And that she goes up to Mudd's, to Lorca's ready room, but now it's Mudd's. Mudd's sending coordinates to the Klingons to tell them where Discovery is. But then Berman offers herself to Mudd as a prize to the Klingons that she says is going to.
I killed Takuvma. I killed their prophet, their savior. And I took the crew. You're nobody. And she says, I'm Michael Burnham. And he's like, what? And then she grabs one of the dark matter crystals and swallows it.
Well, basically, she says I could get you more of a price than
way
even
more money.
Way more money than even Discovery would. So the ship blows up, time restarts, and again, time the events start moving forward as they were before. But this time, Captain Lorca seems to be warned before Mudd, and
you see Tyler programming his chair, the captain's chair.
Sure. And so they seem to do some little things to circumvent this pretty quickly. When Mudd comes onto the bridge, Lorca just hands it over command, says, look, you can take the ship, you can take Burnham and Stamets, just, you know, spare my crew.
Spare everybody else. He's like, I don't want a repeat of, you know, my last command.
We all know how that turned out.
Well, Mudd enlightened us. I find it strange that Mudd is so well-versed in Starfleet lore. Especially for being an outsider. I guess they have the Freedom of Information Act still going strong in the 24th century, but...
Or maybe he just, you know, he's getting information on and intel on people.
From the Klingons, possibly, too, you know?
Yeah, very possible. Mudd sends the coordinates in Lorca's chair to the Klingons, and... then he says, well, I guess this is it. So his wrist device that's using him to control the crystal and everything dissolves. And the computer says that the ship, a Klingon ship, has arrived. So they're going to beam aboard two of the Klingons over to the ship. And he escorts, Mudd takes Stamets and Burnham to them. But while they're walking down there, Stamets and Burnham reveal that they know what Mudd's into and that he's running from Stella and he doesn't want to see Stella anymore. And Tyler shows up and basically says, we all know what you did. Stella is her father's arms dealer, a baron, and they're looking for you.
Super rich. Yeah, it's great. I love how they turn the tide on Mudd, and that's a very Mudd feeling for something just automatically somehow the tides just totally turn on him, just in the worst way possible.
Right.
Because the thing that was going through my mind most of the episode was like, how are they going to do it so they don't kill Mudd? Because earlier I was thinking, just shoot the creature, because they know Mudd's on it. Just shoot it.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good point. But so Stella and her father beam aboard, and Stella's like, you know,
way younger than I thought she'd be.
Yeah, but you got to think, you know, this is going, you know, 10 some years into the future. I mean, past. So but, when we see them later on,
but still,
you know,
like Stella looks like she's in her like late 40s, early 50s in the TOS episode, and this girl looks she's in her 20s.
You know, you got to make it a little. Change it up a little bit.
I don't know why he'd run away from that, because she didn't seem naggy or angry or anything.
Maybe controlling, and Mudd just doesn't want to be controlled, you know?
Her father would probably be the controlling one.
Absolutely. And father says that that Stella's convinced it's convinced him to consolidate all his debts. And then Mudd is goes with Stella and her father, and just they say, just stay out of Starfleet's hair. We don't want to see you again. Next thing we have Burnham and Tyler discussing how Stamets told them that they had danced at one previous time, and Burnham says basically when they get onto the turbo lift that her feelings are complicated and strange, and that
she loves talking about all these conflicting feelings she's got. Just like in the last episode, she's like, I'm mad, but I want to cry. But I'm happy, but I'm sad.
Right. And then Tyler says, hey, I'm not going anywhere. He says, it's just sad that he missed their first kiss. So, and that's kind of how the show ends right there. So.
Yeah. And it's really strange that this was like a love story episode. You would like, that's the furthest thing from my mind whenever I saw the preview last week. That this would be like the love, like that a love story would be like the central theme of the episode.
Right, right. Yeah. So, what are your takeaways of this episode after seeing this?
Well, after like the first time loop, why didn't Stamets just call up Captain Lorca, say, hey, look, just put a security override lockout on all the ship's controls? Like, for the next 30 minutes, just don't let anyone access the computer except for you. Like, there's so many different ways they could have circumvented MUD, and it took them, like over 60 times. I'm just like, yeah, I understood he takes control of the ship, but how can someone who's not registered to the ship just take control over it? Just by voice commands alone, no kind of, like, authorization code. And, like, you know, if that's true, anyone can. Like, anyone can just take a shuttlecraft off a ship. Like, you know, even the kid, you know, in TNG, I mean, that happens all the time. People just lose shuttlecraft. Shut the shuttle bay doors. Well, it's too late. It's always too late. So I feel like they could have circumvented this much easier. Just, like, just, you know, do a certain command override. I mean, if Lorca's got above top secret clearance, he should be able to have some kind of above, lockout of the computer system where only he can access it. If Harry Mudd can do it, why can't the captain do it? Just get to the captain before Harry Mudd gets on the ship.
It is funny. Mudd did mention to Lorca how incredibly easy it was to break into the ship and to take over it.
He also mentions that the ship's got so many ways it can blow up. But I'm like, I feel like he just keeps detonating his ship. His own ship self-destruct is enough to set off the Discovery self-destruct.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's very strange that the... you know, that he's run in with a fourth dimensional being, and, like, the only thing he got for it was, like, this time crystal that's stable. It's just, it's like, how do you deal with a fourth dimensional being? What can you possibly, like, give? I mean, I assume that he probably stole it, but at the same time, like, how do you steal from a fourth dimensional being?
Well, we don't know if he stole it. Maybe he just acquired it, or maybe it was given to him by the Klingons, too, you know?
But, man, if the Klingons had that, like, what could the Klingons do with it? There's so many questions this episode brings up. I just love to get some more background on.
Well, and then, you know, when we get to iMud, you know, Mud discovers a whole planet full of, like, androids
from the Andromeda Galaxy, which I thought was really fascinating.
Which, to think, you know, he was so small-minded just to try to take over the Enterprise, or I don't know if he was necessarily looking to do just that, the Enterprise, but that he could have done more than just that. He could have had the androids build a starship, or I don't know. It just seems bizarre that he's so petty, you know. That's his thing. He gets these huge gifts and he just piddles them away.
Yeah, but I just imagined. Have you seen the most recent Orville episode?
No, I'm way behind on Orville, so okay. I'm only like four episodes in or something.
Well, I know you've seen Black Mirror, where they have like the social media thing where they upvote people or downvote people based on like their status, and it basically determines their social status. The most recent Orville did that, and I was like, well, this is so weird. This feels like Dark Matter, not Dark Matter, Dark Mirror.
Right.
Not Orville. Right. But I'm just like, in a society like that, it just was so strange. And Mud, I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, that Mud piddles away his when he gets something really awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That he would just do something like that. I just don't. It's so petty. And he's got such a bigger. There's so much stuff he could have done. That's where I was going. I remember now. So basically, they have a correctional thing that basically just turns you into a potato. You're just like, oh, I'm happy. Oh, I guess this is also spoilers for Orville, too, but if you haven't seen the most recent Orville episode. But basically, it just programs them to like, oh, I'm happy. I don't have any bad thoughts anymore. I don't do bad things. I'm just good for the public and the society.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if Starfleet's reprogramming is like that, but maybe it just makes them a little bit more docile and not as frightening. Because apparently, by at least the third Mud episode, he's gone through it at least twice, if not three times.
Or just escaped.
Sure, but I mean, I just wonder if maybe the technology Starfleet's using is still like frying his brain a little bit, where he's like, he still wants to be bad, but he's not going to be as bad.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, we see Dagger of the Mind, which has a technology to, you know, make people completely placid. But, I mean, they're basically supposed to be these, you know, rehabilitation centers that get people to totally just be, you know, normal functioning people instead of criminals. So,
yeah.
It's not really painted really clearly in all Star Trek how they deal with the criminal element and how to weed that out psychologically.
Yeah, because, I mean, Mudd's got to have something happen that's pacified him somewhat. Because he is way... But it may be just because this episode he was just mad at Lorca. Maybe just that spite at Lorca is what is what drove him this episode.
Sure.
If it wasn't, I mean, that is a huge gulf for Mudd to go from, like, to be, like, violently vindictive, like, straight up shooting and melting people, killing them with all the different things, like, he's found in Lorca's playroom. All this stuff, it makes him so sinister and way more evil than I would have thought. Like, before, he was just, like, just petty and, like, oh, you know, morally ambiguous. But yeah. Now he's, like, just ruthless. And I like it. Rainn Wilson plays it really well, but I feel like something has to happen between this time and when we see him in Mudd's Women to make
it's
him
it's possible.
You know, less of, I don't know, whatever he is now.
Yeah, it's possible.
What about you?
Yeah, this episode, it's better on a personal level because we get to see Berman's feelings for Tyler to get, you know, to grow more. And, you know, obviously they have their kiss, even though it's kind of erased. But we kind of know where it's all going. And we get kind of like this whole Groundhog Day episode again, just like we said earlier, like cause and effect. But the thing is that I just think cause and effect, the Next Generation executed this material much better. Although we have Stamets sort of as the Data, you know, he's sort of like the messiah to come in and tell everybody that something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Stamets is obviously a little more, he knows what's happening.
He's a lot more involved.
He's a lot more involved, but he doesn't have Data's kind of, you know, logic, you know, his android brain compared to, you know, Stamets got his mushroom induced brain, whatever that's doing to him. So,
well, the thing is with cause and effect was a much simpler premise, though. Cause and effect, sure. the whole point of the episode was to figure out how to get out of the loop. And that was the problem, and getting out of the loop was solving the problem. In this, there's so much more to it. They almost did too much, in my opinion, because it's like, sure, there's a loop and they're trying to get out of it, but the loop isn't caused by random chance. The loop is caused deliberately and by someone with an advanced technology, and that's what makes it different. Also, they're trying to, like, throw in this love story arc into the layered on top of an already kind of complicated concept where they're doing, you know, Groundhog Day thing where they've got to tell a coherent story while they're also repeating a lot of the same things and changing them up a little bit as Stamets is trying to get people to help him win the day. So it's there's so much more to it than there was to cause and effect. Like, there's way more layers. Agreed. So that's I think the simplicity of cause and effect is probably what makes it a more effective episode.
Yeah, but it just seems like it made some jumps. Like you mentioned before, it seemed like at some point that Michael Berman's character realized what was happening.
Right after the dance, she kind of knows immediately.
It doesn't make a lot of sense that she would have figured that out. I mean, I understand Stamets is kind of like outside the time and space as they know it. So maybe there's something about him that he's realizing something more. I'm willing to go along with that ride, but not that, you know, Berman is going to figure it out, you know, faster or better, you know. And it seems like 30 minutes, it just is not enough time. If it was like half a day.
Or maybe they just skip the part where Stamets talks to her.
Oh, I'm sure that's exactly what happened. But, I mean, that's what I assumed. But when I first watched it, I was like, that's bullshit, you know. But then I thought, well, maybe there's something more I'm not seeing here.
Because they did. Like, on previous loops, they started skipping stuff. Like, stuff you'd already seen. So, and Stamets, and you did see Stamets there because he was, like, watching them dance.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, like, I guess he just told her, but it didn't feel like it. It didn't feel like it. It just felt like it started over, and then he immediately went over. Like, if Stamets was already there, like, next to her in the shot, I think that would have been a little bit better as a calming effect for us. Because it's like, okay, they just talked. Now she's going over to talk to Tyler. But in that shot, she just, like, wakes up and then goes and talks to Tyler, which seemed to indicate that she was understanding the loop on her own.
Yeah, right. Yeah, which, I just think it. I just don't think this this episode. I think that you're right. They're trying to cram too much into it, and but it just doesn't execute as well as cause and effect. The only thing that speeds up the process more is that Stamets is fully aware of what's happening with the time loop, where Data only could figure it out through piecing the clues together.
The number four,
right?
Or number three. I'm sorry, it's number three. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, that's understandable on Data's part because I mean they couldn't like send a message back for them to hear it. Stamets actually is the messenger, so
and he can deliver so much more information,
but nobody believes him. So it's interesting. I mean, there's some interesting dynamics for sure. And absolutely. It's not that I didn't enjoy this episode. I just thought. I was like, I just feel like you're just trying to put too much in, and it's like a little like they had like a couple montage sequences of you know everything going on. And I just felt like they're rushing too much. So I don't know. To get Mud back this way, it's interesting, but it seems like a little bit too much for Mud for me. And I'm kind of agree with you. Like Mud never seemed to be completely murderous.
Like bloodthirsty.
Just, yeah. Just more just, you know, he wants to make some money, but I don't think he was willing to kill a crew over and over and over again.
I think even in an earlier episode, we were saying that we don't think Mud would like straight up kill somebody, but this episode proved otherwise.
Right.
And, you know, what I said in our episode talking about, you know, the Ballad of Mud, you know, I said, like, I feel like him and Kirk would get along real good, you know, if and after seeing this episode, I'm not sure about that anymore.
Yeah. And the fact that when they found the Enterprise found Mud, I would assume that they would have locked him up as soon as they found him, because this would have been on record of what Mud did.
I don't think they keep good records in the Federation. I honestly don't think they keep good records. It's like Lorca's got a triple on his desk, and we haven't seen it in several episodes. We haven't seen it since we've seen Lieutenant Tyler. So I think that's really fishy that all of a sudden his triple's gone. Like the Klingon detector, that's gone. But I guess they didn't really know anything about triples until Trouble with Tribbles, or Lorca just found it and didn't tell anyone what it was. And
right.
But people saw it on his desk. I assume more people went to his ready room than just Michael. Michael didn't question it either. And it's gone now. And I think it's very fishy that all of a sudden the Klingon detector is gone. When you possibly have a Klingon agent on the ship. And someone, as I saw a theory online, that someone thinks Lorca is actually a Klingon and not Ash Tyler. Like that Lorca was replaced in Choose Your Pain, and not I feel like he wasn't there long enough for him to be replaced. But the Tribble's been gone since that episode.
Interesting. That's an interesting thought.
So it's. But I mean, it was gone when Saru was there. It wasn't gone because, you know, because Lorca came back and got rid of it because Lorca's a Klingon now. It was gone when Saru was in his room. So it was there before. And it's not there that episode. So I thought that was really strange. So I don't think it's gone because of Lorca, because it was gone before he got captured.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm confused at like what happened to the pet Tribble, because this is like so important, especially if there is a Klingon agent somewhere on the ship. Like that Tribble is like the ace in the hole. It's what we all know as Star Trek fans, that they're Klingon detectors. Like because they spaz out.
Well, there's two thoughts there. One, that obviously they might not know that the Tribble is a Klingon detector at this point, because remember they only discovered it in Trouble Tribbles that the Tribbles freak out.
That we know of, but that we know. Starfleet is terrible at keeping records. They right. didn't keep good ones about Harry Mudd, like on his rap sheet on the Mudd's women. There's nothing about, like, you know, holding a starship hostage in multiple time loops. You'd think that would be up there as a list of crimes.
Yeah. Just to go along with the idea of Harry Mudd being let go, wasn't it weird that Tyler, you know, Lieutenant Tyler just said, like, made the deal? Like, Lorca wasn't even in the room when they beamed away?
Yeah.
Like, Lorca didn't have anything to do with it. Like, here's the guy who blew up your ship, like, 50-some times and killed you 50-some times.
Specifically murdered you to death.
Yeah, and then, you know, Lieutenant Tyler's like, yeah, and then just, you know, we don't want to see you anymore, so.
I guess he was the ranking officer in the room.
Yeah, but wouldn't you call the captain?
It'd probably be a good idea, but then again, you're a Klingon plant.
So you think. I mean, I'm assuming we're not going to see any fallout for this decision, but I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So,
like, I was expecting fallout from them letting the tardigrade go, and there was no fallout at all. So, fallout doesn't seem to happen much on Discovery.
Right. As long as you don't mess with the weapons or the spore drive, Lorca doesn't care what you do.
Yeah, he's a very laissez-faire captain when he's not like letting you get murdered.
Right. Right. I don't know.
So, sometimes it's like, oh, it might be cool being on Lorca's ship. And other times it's like, but you might die horribly being under Lorca.
Yeah. Which we do see.
Yeah. It does happen. He's got those fun dark matter like disintegrators. Oh, it's so crazy all the stuff Lorca has access to. So I wonder if any of these things will come back up later since Harry Mudd found them. I just wonder, like, what Easter eggs will be laid for future episodes.
And do you think we'll see Mudd come back?
I want to see Mudd come back. I want to see how he gets from this to what we see him later on, because he's so menacing. He was so menacing in this episode. Like, he had the little bit of fun when he beamed Mork out in the space, but other than that, he was absolutely menacing.
Yeah.
Way more than what I would expect from him, which is why I think he's got to have some kind of thing happen to his brain that maybe takes away some of his drive and some of his cunning. It's still there, but not as like amped up. Like he becomes less augmented. Like he's like a scamming augment, you know, right now. and then he becomes unaugmented, where he's still a scammer, but he just doesn't have that superior ambitions. You know, breed superior everything else. You know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it just seems you could be right. Maybe they like institutionalized him enough that he doesn't get so
he's not
as aggressive. Yeah, so violent, right? Yeah, yeah.
which is why he starts getting into love potions and aphrodisiacs and turning plain women hot or old women hot. I don't know if they were supposed to be old or just plain looking, or maybe both. I don't know.
Yeah,
and Mudd's women.
Yeah.
It was hard to tell because like whenever they made them ugly, you know, quote unquote ugly, like they just were making like really scary faces like on purpose, and I think they were giving them wrinkles. So I don't know if they were just old, or just plain, or maybe a little bit of both,
or dehydrated.
They weren't even real women. Oh, that would be bad. Like just, you know, hydrated, whatever. Because you know the lizard thing he was making out with in the animated episode, that wasn't even a real woman. It was a lizard.
That's right.
What if they were lizards?
That'd be hilarious if they were lizards. Oh my god.
We're gonna bring some hot lizard women that aren't really women to the miners.
Oh god. things got weird.
Well, the animated series just makes things so much more complicated.
Oh, I love it.
It's great. I just love how just Spock just shoots it, knowing it's like, oh yeah, it's probably not a real woman.
Spock just like, ah, fuck. just zap it.
It's like, oh, it's a lizard. It's like, okay, it's fine. It's, you know. But still, it was a living thing and Spock just shot it.
Yeah. It's awesome.
To prove a point. I thought that was really strange for Spock. Well, I guess it's about as strange as Spock drawing a pentagram, standing on it, and performing black magic.
Well, you know, animated series is just that gift that just keeps on giving.
That weird just keeps on weirding. Instead of Stranger Things, they should call the animated series Strangest Things.
Strangest Trek.
Strangest Trek Things. Absolutely.
Yeah, I like the revamping of Stella. I like, you know, and I love Rainn Wilson as Mudd. I think he did great. Still does great. I don't know. There's just I guess there's a lot of questions.
Stella had some huge earrings. Almost remind me of the SETI eel earrings that I link in the Facebook group every now and then, but silver and bigger. They're just ginormous.
Yeah, they're pretty big. The other thing I found kind of odd, What was I going to say? So Tyler said that he basically broke into the Betazoid bank by basically using this time loop over and over again to figure out the systems to get into the bank itself. Figure out the
patrols, yeah.
Yeah, so, but then what's strange is that, like you said, he could get into the ship and hack into the computer, so he must have done it quite a few times before he was successful.
Absolutely.
So, just weird. But it's a fun episode, no matter what. I mean, it just wasn't. I just think they just rushed too much and they tried to push too much stuff into it. And the Tyler Berman story love affair thing. It's interesting, and like we said, we know that she's going to get her heart broken by this guy because something's going to happen. But
yeah, something's weird about Tyler. I think the biggest twist would be if there's nothing weird about Tyler.
Yeah, he's just normal.
he's just really what he is.
But that would probably be most shocking.
I think so. But the thing is, the first episode makes you so much doubt it, and the second episode makes you doubt it a little bit. And this and then now they're trying to make it so hard to make you like him. Like last episode and this episode, they're just trying so hard to make you like make him such a likable character. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It feels like they're trying too hard, like to make you, no, everything's fine with him. He's cool. He's going to be a good guy.
I feel like they're trying too hard. Yeah, and wasn't it Michael Burnham's character said, or somebody said during this episode that Stamets says, how have you gone through 7 months of Klingon imprisonment and torture, and you're still such a nice, even keel person?
So they're still hinting at it every episode, but at the same time they're trying to make you like him so much.
Yeah,
and it's just I don't know what that's about. I mean, I feel like they're trying to misdirect you, and I'm trying so hard not to fall for it. I'm like, there's something got to be up with him.
It would be a funny kick in the ass if it was Lorca who was the Klingon operative, you know. But then wouldn't you be seeing him to hand over the spore drive to the Klingons somehow within the next couple episodes?
Yeah, I would think that would be the thing, and that's also the thing with Tyler. That's a little bit of doubt you get with Tyler this episode, where he's trying to defend the ship. But maybe his mission isn't to get the spore drive. Maybe his mission is something more subtle, so he's got to play the part.
Yeah. Good point. I don't know. I just don't trust Tyler. I don't think anybody does. I think, what do we post that thing? I send that thing on our Synthaholics group, Facebook group page, about how his plate had French fries all over the place.
He also has the big green drink, which is what the Klingons, the Klingon actors had to drink because they couldn't eat solid food.
Really? They don't eat solid food?
The actors who can't eat in the prosthetics.
Oh, right, gotcha.
So they had these like green Klingon drinks, and I think it was like the same kind of like the Klingon slushy,
Klingon slushy.
This big green drink, and I'm like, isn't that the drink the Klingons drink?
Right. I don't know.
And one thing I forgot to mention about last episode, the food replicator's like, oh, this is good for you. Oh, this is all this stuff like that. I want to see someone order a pizza or a burger, and the computer just yell at them.
You bastard.
It's like, this is not good for you at all. So go die. Go see Dr. Huber immediately after you eat this.
That's funny. Go die.
Are you asking for a heart attack?
Are you hurting? Do you want to clog your arteries? It's hard to sit there and go like, hey, obviously Ash Tyler has to be a, Klingon operative. But like you said, it's just they seem to be painting him so much as there's got to be something going on. And I don't know.
The Arn Darvin thing, the House Mokai and their spies, all this stuff is just like painting this picture. There's got to be a spy. There's got to be a spy somewhere. Because if there isn't, that would just be disappointing. And the one of my other musings about this is that, like I said at the beginning, I'm glad Michael's finally seeming like she's the main character of the show. I mean, I know the show's always been like, gravitating around her, but I never felt like she was the real main character until this episode. But to me, the show still doesn't feel like a war show. They keep mentioning the war in the background, but we never really see it. We saw a little bit in Butcher's Knife, and we saw the outbreak of the war in the two pilot episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I mean, they're captured by Klingons, but that could have happened any time. I mean, you've got, you know, Claw in Star Trek V. The Klingons and Federation are technically at peace, but he's just being like a Klingon dick shooting at people. Any Klingons at any point in time could have taken a Federation prisoner just for funsies, because right. Klingons are dicks. So, you know, that the season is like the only season with the war is really disappointing to me, because they're not, I mean, they keep talking about it, but like talking about it isn't seeing the war. Like, this is supposed to be the ship that's like winning the war. She says, oh, we've done all this stuff for the war in her personal log, but we're not seeing any of it.
Right.
So
right.
I'm really disappointed that they pitched this as a war show, and we're not really getting to see what the Discovery does on the front lines. I mean, up until the, you know, last episode, I mean, the episode before Leith, we were just figuring out how the ship works. And then, yeah. then in Leithy, we've got the, you know, the search for Sarek.
Right.
And then in this
right.
episode, we get a time loop. And, you know, the chess pieces, like, just in Leithy got set with, you know, Ash being, you know, POW, immediately chief of security, Michael getting a station on the bridge. Like, the pieces are set for stuff to finally start happening. And I feel like stuff hasn't started happening yet. I mean, the show's been absolutely great. Like, the first two episodes, I felt like we hadn't seen anything. And now, I feel like we've seen stuff. I mean, the show's been absolutely fantastic. And the only reason I think I'm down on this episode is I think I amped myself up way too high last episode, because the preview just looked, oh, yay, Harry Mudd, yay, the, you know, a cause and effect episode. So I had all these things, like, amping me up for this episode. So that's the only reason I feel like I'm down on this episode. I liked it, but this war series, and everyone's like, oh, Star Trek isn't about war. Star Trek isn't about war. And like, we're not getting much war. They mention it, but you're supposed to show, not tell. And I feel like they're doing a lot of telling and not showing.
Yeah. The one thing is, it did seem like the preview showed that the next episode looks like that there's going to be definitely some conflict with the Klingons. So
it does, but it looks like there's so much going on. It looks like it's going to be a Saru heavy episode, but then we saw Admiral Cornwell and some battle stuff. Like, it looks like there's going to be so much that happens in the next episode. It looks like they're almost kind of doing too much in next episode too, from what we saw in the preview.
Right, right.
And the one thing that bothers me is that they're doing all this stuff, but like, you're on a paywall channel. You're not on TV. You don't need commercials.
Right.
You don't have to fit the show in a commercial amount of time. I know you've got the live after Trek, but you can just start it immediately after the show's over. It doesn't have to be exactly 45 minutes and an hour with commercials. Like, yeah. Use that extra time. There's so many unanswered questions, and there's so much that I feel like they could be doing with characters and stuff like that to get a little bit more, because there's I always want more from these episodes, and they're giving a lot, but you know, with a few extra minutes, this episode could have felt a little bit less jittery.
Yeah, it's you know, I agree. I think they are still kind of peddling to the format of a standard television show in some aspects. But you know, they are breaking out of that a little bit. But I think you're right. They have not focused much on the war, and some of it also is just to, I think it would just get boring, because we just basically get episode one and two, you know, Battle of the Binary Stars over and over again. And that can get a little drawn out and boring. I mean,
sure, but the ship isn't just a battle. They're doing, I assume they're doing other things, because they can jump anywhere they want.
Mm-hmm.
And we also haven't heard about any other ramifications about, you know, in Choose Your Pain, they talked about more spore drive ships are being built, and they're on the search for tardigrades. We haven't gotten an update on that either. Like, right. Have they found any more tardigrades for other ships as a spore drive? Because something still has to go catastrophically wrong with this. Like, Stamets has to go mad or die for them to be like, oh, maybe we don't want to do this.
And or something happens with the spore drive that renders that they realize they can't use it anymore for some reason. Because obviously we never see a spore drive again.
Or mentioned ever. So something's got to go horribly wrong with it. So far, everything seems hunky-dory. So I'm waiting for something to happen
that make I'm assuming it's going to be like the Philadelphia experiment where the ship is supposed to phase in and out of reality.
Well, that's like that's probably
Navy ship.
Well, that's probably how, yeah, but that's probably how we get the mirror universe. That Jonathan Franks he said there's going to be a mirror universe episode. So mm-hmm. I assume that's how they're going to get to the mirror universe, since Stamets is out of space and time. And we had that, you know, the hint of him smiling in the mirror. We've got so much more. I mean, he's probably going to be able to see into the mirror universe. And yeah. He'll probably jump them there on accident. One of the theories I read online was that to get out of the Harry Mudd predicament, like he'd have to do like a random jump without any preparation, and that would land them in the mirror universe. So like, oh, that'd be interesting. But it looks like the mirror universe episode won't even be to the second half of the season.
Because unless it kicks in, you know, sometimes in the next two episodes.
Yeah, on the next two episodes. But the next two episodes, it's like it's too jam packed to even, you know, even hint at mirror universe. Unless the cliffhanger is that they do end up in the mirror universe in episode 9.
Yeah, which is a possibility.
That could be the cliffhanger at that point, and then maybe they can spend the rest of on winning the war. Because I really want to see like what, you know, I want to see them do more with the ship and like what other missions it's doing that to help win the war. Because we've only seen them do one mission, for the war on Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped. Yeah. They helped the dilithium miners, and it was awesome. It was so awesome seeing them.
It was cool. Yeah, they were in and out like Superman.
So I want to see more of what the Discovery's doing to win the war,
or at least allude to it. Like, you know, you start the episode with them just getting done with like fighting some Klingons or something like that. You know,
sure, you know something. But they're just like, oh yeah, we've done Michael Burnham's logs. Like, oh yeah, we've done all this stuff to help win the war, and oh thanks. Can I see it, please?
Can I see the proof?
Where's the pudding? I hear the proof's in there. Show it to me. I won't eat it. I just want to look at it.
Well, but still, I mean, it's definitely an interesting episode, and these make for interesting stories. I just do think that we had all these Battle of the Binary Star kind of conflicts. I think it would get a little old.
Sure. I'm not asking for explosions every single episode, but I would like to see something to go with the war. Because, I mean, in Deep Space Nine, they had a lot of battles, a lot of space battles. Yeah. Like that, they didn't even show the space battles in the one we did with Jen, Once More Into the Breach. Mm-hmm, but it was still a battle episode. I mean, you didn't really see any battle. You saw the point of view of them in the battle, but you didn't see anything else happening. Like, you didn't see the Jem'Hadar ships. You didn't see the people firing on them. You just saw their situation.
Right.
That's all they need to do. Like, have something like that. Because you can have battle episodes without being, Battle of the Binary Stars.
Right, right. True enough. I just think in that they wanted to tell more stories and they want to get into the characters. But I mean, you make a valid point.
Yeah, just if they're going to wrap up the war in one season, I feel like it wasn't enough. I mean, if they're going to do stuff like this, this could be like a 4 or 5 season arc, and then they could do something else for a couple seasons before the show's over. You know what I mean? And one thing we did not mention. I know last week we talked about why haven't they renewed the show yet? Well, they did renew the show. They renewed it the morning after we recorded.
Yeah.
So we recorded the night of the show, like we were doing now. And in the very morning, as I was editing, I read that they renewed the show for a second season. So that is fantastic news. We forgot to lead with that. But it's there, and I'm so excited that the show is going on for a second season. That's extremely exciting to me.
Oh yeah, it's going to be great, and it's cool that we get to see that again. Somebody made a joke on one of the things. That, yeah, well, CBS just signed a couple year lease for their studio space up in Toronto. So,
oh nice, obviously,
yeah, no, it's definitely going to be pretty cool that we're going to see probably a little more Star Trek coming our way in the next. Bit here.
One of the things I was thinking is maybe they were taking so long to confirm a second season is maybe they were, you know, hoping to announce like another show along with it. You know, to like not only have some good news, to have a lot of good news. That's one thing I was starting to think about. Maybe that's why they're taking so long to mention it. But maybe for season 3 we'll get news of a new show. whenever they do confirm that. So I would love to see things expand. And there was actually an article with Rainn Wilson, and Rainn Wilson was like, I want them to do a Harry Mudd spinoff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm down for it. I would love to see more Rainn Wilson.
But weren't they going to do the Khan Noonien Singh spinoff?
Well, I've heard nothing about that since before Star Trek Discovery aired. I mean, there was the rumor that that's what Nicholas Meyer was working on, and Nicholas Meyer tweeted, I cannot confirm that, and then nothing. Not that I've seen. I mean, there may have been something, I've not seen anything. I've not seen any mention of it on social media or any articles.
Well, if they're keeping it under wraps, they're not going to say much for quite a while.
Sure. But, you know, people seem to have, you know, not been focusing on it now that Discovery's out, so there's that as well. Well, that was just when Rainn Wilson be like, yeah, I want to have a whole Harry Mudd show. You know, I mean, he just wants financial security. I don't blame him, but I would still watch that because he is so convincing and so compelling to watch as Harry Mudd.
I don't know. He seems to got pretty bloodthirsty. I don't know if I want to see a whole show of him like this.
Well, I guess that was before I seen this episode, but that I was thinking that after I read that article. But I do want to see, like I had said it before, I want to see how he turns from this into what we see in Star Trek. So if we, you know, if we had a show, we could see that arc and see how he changes as a man, which I wouldn't mind seeing.
Right.
But it wouldn't be Star Trek. But I'd love to see more of Rainn Wilson as Harry Mudd.
It would be cool, but I guess they have to see how popular the show gets and if anything else comes with it. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, right now, I mean, we've seen some numbers, but we don't really know much. I'm sure they'll give more information, you know, when we get quarterly reports and stuff like that from CBS to see how well their this venture is doing for them fiscally. Sure. You know?
But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to watching this episode again. It's, guys who are, you know, everyone who's listening, when we record these immediately after we watch the episode, it's so hard to have, like, think objectively about it because we've just seen it. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing the episode again and seeing what that brings to light. I know a couple of people have mentioned that I was hard on the Vulcan Hello and Battle of Binary Stars, but again, those were only with one view under my belt. With our previous Star Trek episodes, you know, when we're not talking about Discovery, these are things we've seen dozens of times, probably.
I don't think I'm going to like this episode, no matter how many times I watch it. And not that I hated this episode, I just don't think it's a great episode. I've actually noticed that this episode and the one I just haven't been crazy about it. Not that I hate them, I didn't walk away from it and be like, yeah, this is awesome. You know, I just feel like, yeah, it's okay.
Sure, you know? Sure. But I mean, I just wanted to throw that disclaimer out that, you know, we are just have seen the episode. We haven't had a lot of time to stew on it. These are as immediate reactions as pretty much you can get.
Right. But I mean, if I had like, you know, when we had the episode, the third episode that came out, I mean, I was just, you know, I was gaga over it. I just couldn't believe how good it got.
So was I. I mean, Context is for King is what sold the show for me. Like, the first two episodes are, you know, fine. And I liked them much more on my second and third viewings than I did on my first viewing. But episode three is just probably my favorite of the show so far.
Absolutely. So at the moment, so.
Yeah, so far, you know, up until this point.
And Choose Your Pain was pretty good.
Oh, Choose Your Pain was great.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just and Butcher's Knife had some really great stuff in it too. Like, those three episodes are probably my top three of the season so far. So like,
yeah, mine as well.
Like 3, 4, and 5.
But the last two, this episode 7, episode 6, just I mean, I could see they're kind of moving the story forward a little bit, but
it's like they're just placing the chess pieces. Like, there's some Game of Thrones episodes like that where I'm just like, nothing happened. All they did was move the character pieces around. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I feel like Lethe and this episode were kind of doing that. We're moving the chess pieces around. We're seeing how the chess pieces feel about themselves and each other. Then we can move forward.
Yeah.
And next episode looks like that step forward. We're going to see some war. We're going to find out what's going on with Admiral. Something happens with Saru. It's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to next week. I'm going to not get my hopes up as high. So hopefully I'll be blown away again.
Yeah. Well, here's to next week. Let's hope it happens. We have a great two more episodes before we get our break with Discovery.
Absolutely. And on our YouTube channel, I just put up the Spore Drive shot, how to make it. So if you've seen that picture floating around different Discovery groups and our Synthaholics group, I have a video now, so you can check it out on our YouTube channel. And just type in Synthaholics, and it'll be one of the first things that pops up. Or just type in Spore Drive shot, and it'll show you how to make the drink that I made specially in honor of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, awesome. Cool stuff. Yeah, Dave makes some pretty tasty drinks. Not really crazy about the brain hemorrhage. It still looks too gross for me to drink it. I drank it the one time, but it's not my go-to drink for a Dave Duncan specialty drink.
Sure, that's more like a Halloween fun shot, and that's the brain hemorrhage is a staple of mixed drinks, layered drinks. It's not something I made myself, but the Spore Drive was my own concoction, and I brought it to a party last night, and people seemed to enjoy it. I the whole bottle's gone, so
I mean, got them all drunk.
Yes, I think I gave some of them hangovers, maybe.
Good for you.
But they enjoyed the drink, so that's all that matters. I'm happy that people have enjoyed it. So if you want to...
It's Halloween.
Yes, exactly. So if you're interested and if you like making shots or want to try something new, go and check that out and see if you like it. Let me know if you drink it and try it. I'd be very interested to find out.
Very cool. Anything else you want to talk about this episode? About magic that makes the sanest man go mad? Mad?
Oh, yeah, I do. Now that you mentioned the title... I mentioned earlier that I wanted to say when I asked you who you thought the sanest man was, and you said Michael. Uh-huh. The reason I was I made an allusion to it earlier was that Stamets tells her that love is not logical, and right. That's that her revelation to him was that she is never been in love before. And maybe that's what the episode's alluding to. Magic is love, or love can be considered magic to make the sanest man Michael go mad.
Right,
she has to go mad to fall in love. Metaphorically speaking, I love the titles for these episodes. They're so layered.
Yeah, no, they're very cool, and obviously the layering of these, they have the A and B plots that seem to correspond with each other, much like we would see often in, Deep Space Nine or Voyager. Voyager. Usually the A and B plot had nothing to do with each other, and it was very confusing. But mostly Deep Space Nine, they seem to have like a corresponding thread of the what was going on between the A and B plot.
Nip Tuck also did a very good job between their A and B plots, I gotta say.
I didn't watch too much of Nip Tuck, so I think I caught like the first two episodes and I just was not interested.
Oh, I love that show.
It's a weird thing.
It is a weird thing. I just started Nip Tuck podcast for a show that's been over for years.
Yeah, it's been over. Well, we did it for Star Trek.
Hey, that would be cool. Let's get Nip Tuck to come back. Let's do a Nip Tuck podcast.
I want to do a Rockford Files podcast, but I think that's a little bit past everyone's prime.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, Dave. Anyways.
But that was my last musing on the episode, because saying the title made me think of the thing I was going to talk about later that I neglected to until that point. What about you?
Gotcha. I don't have anything more to say. I mean, good episode, not the greatest. I think you're right. I think they jammed a little bit too much into this one episode.
Very good. Very good. Well, can't wait for next week. You can find us online at Synthaholics.com, and you can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Personally, I am David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
And Guy is at GSDavisArt.
If you have a chance, please go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Synthaholics. And if you could throw $1 a month, just to help us keep our costs down for web hosting and everything we do to give you this podcast. We definitely plan to keep this podcast free, but if you do have a little money you could throw our way, we greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely.
If you could go to Apple iTunes and you could rate and review us, preferably 5 stars, and something say something nice about us. It helps us get seen by more people looking for
Star Trek shows.
Absolutely, or any just podcast, period. Secondly, if you know somebody who likes Star Trek or interested in Star Trek Discovery, just steer them our way. Let them know that we exist and that, hey, these guys might be fun to listen to while you're, you know, banging away at the office doing your mind-numbing work.
Absolutely. And if you're a fan of Star Trek Discovery or know someone who is and isn't listening to podcasts, send them our way, because we are covering Discovery as they come out.
Trying to the best and fastest we can.
Absolutely. So thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate every single one of you. It's such so great to see hear your feedback and hear you guys on the Facebook group. And speaking of the Facebook group, come and join it. It's facebook.com/groups/synthaholics for all your Star Trek fun discussion with like-minded individuals. And mostly, it's a pretty nice place. Not no one's really toxic, and it's a fun, safe, enjoyable Star Trek place.
Yeah, we're pretty nice to everybody. Nobody beats up anybody on our Facebook page.
And if they do, they get the boot. But we haven't had to do that.
They haven't had the Das Boot.
Das Boot. We haven't had to do that yet. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I think only kicked one person out for trying to hawk sunglasses.
They were probably a bot or something like that. I don't know if
it's
a person.
I figured, but
absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Me a drink before the night's over. I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. I'm not going to say what episode because I don't remember.
What episode are we at?
We've never said our episode number. I wanted to say what episode of Star Trek Discovery we were on.
Here, I'll say it. You can edit it out. Let me just.
Okay.
Episode 3. Oh, I'm sorry.
Episode 3?
Episode.